Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
This is the Dutch International Service, Radio Netherlands. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine for shortwave listeners. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks.
Hello there. And before we get underway today, a quick thank you to all those people who've sent us Christmas cards. The volume of greetings has taken us a bit by surprise, and with the high cost of postage these days, I'd just like to say that your thoughts are appreciated. In reply, we've sent our Christmas card to those who've sent us one, and we'll be acknowledging some of them next Tuesday in Christmas Shortwave Feedback. Some nice entries too for Media Quiz 81, our current competition. Remember, the closing date is December 31st, and for frustrated listeners in certain parts of Australia, where there's a postal strike at the moment, I think Victoria and New South Wales are the main affected areas, don't worry, we will take that into consideration. Let's start first, though, with Media Roundup with Roger Broadbent.
And we begin with the proposed station Radio Marti, which has been the subject of many US press stories recently. Media Network correspondent Dennis Powell, based in New York, has been following the latest developments.
The U.S. National Security Advisor, Richard Allen, said in September that Radio Marti would be beaming Spanish-language broadcasts to Cuba by this January. Now it's all but certain he was wrong. Allen was the station's chief advocate, and since plans for Radio Marti were announced, he's gotten into hot water over dealings with the Japanese press and Japanese businessmen. He's stepped down, at least temporarily, and for now, work on the station appears to have come to a halt as well. Meanwhile, the U.S. Congress has taken up the subject of Radio Marti. State Department officials testified before the House Subcommittee on Government Information and Individual Rights, and the chairman of that subcommittee, Congressman Glenn English, says he doesn't believe Congress will approve the $10 million necessary to get Radio Marti on the air.
It would require the approval of both houses, and given the responses that we received to the questions before our subcommittee, I think that they're going to be there's going to have to be an awful lot of work done before this is ready to be brought before Congress.
Congressman English says as a result, some State Department employees tried to find a way to get around Congress.
The political appointees within the State Department, and that seems to be the group that's pushing hard for establishing Radio Marti, was going to attempt to divert some funds from other areas and actually begin construction before the Congress gave its approval.
The congressman said this threw State Department lawyers into a panic. Those lawyers quickly issued the ruling to other State Department employees that any attempt to divert money for operation of Radio Marti would be illegal. That plan has apparently been dropped. Congressman English says the mood in Congress is highly critical of the plan to put Radio Marti on the air. The prevailing opinion is Radio Marti could only do what the Voice of America is already doing better. He says there's a strong belief that the station would be blatantly anti-Castro, possibly to curry favor among the many thousands of Cuban expatriates living in Florida.
Well, I think that the main purpose of Radio Marti, as has been speculated, is, first of all, it's a political showpiece. It's my understanding the president made some statements about it during the campaign, particularly down in the Florida area. But I think that it's designed to broadcast propaganda.
And that is likely to cause the proposal further trouble in Congress. Many senators and representatives believe that putting a propaganda station on the air would harm the reputations of other American overseas outlets, such as the VOA, Radio Liberty, and Radio Free Europe, which enjoy strong reputations for credibility. Congressman English said Radio Marti could use up money that would better be spent on those services.
Sooner or later, it's going to draw funds from the other radios. And you have stations such as the Voice of America, and they're still using old vacuum tubes, and it's a process, and you know, straight out of the 1950s. They're in desperate need of improvement and updating, and that $10 million would go a long ways towards strengthening their efforts.
In the final analysis, Radio Marti won't go on the air next month, and it now seems likely that the proposal will be allowed to die. quietly and peacefully.
Dennis Powell. Meanwhile, we talked to A.B. Nathan's office in Tel Aviv, Israel, yesterday to find out more on the latest situation with a peace ship anchored in the Mediterranean. It appears that under proposed Israeli law, operations from the Voice of Peace and another television ship will have to cease as from January the 1st. At present, it's still not clear whether the Israeli government will finally approve a request from Nathan to bring his ship ashore and begin broadcasts from land-based operations. At the moment, though, it could mean that 1539 kHz, the present Voice of Peace outlet, is silent at the close of 1981. And now let's look into the future.
On
747
and
1512
medium wave, this is Radio Delta from the heart of Europe. Welcome to the English service, where the time is now 2 minutes past 10.
Well, that's how the station may sound if all goes well with the Delta project, a scheme which goes back to the Medium and Longwave Planning Conference in Geneva, Switzerland, in 1975, as Bert Steinkamp, head of programmes at Radio Netherlands, now explains.
Belgium and the Netherlands wanted to acquire, the two of them, a longwave frequency and a new medium wave frequency each. Too many applicants. As a result, there was a sort of marriage between the two, as a result of which Belgium obtained a shorter medium wave frequency and the Netherlands got reinstated into its long wave rights. The frequencies is, of course, only the vehicle. What was the purpose of the thing? The purpose was very strongly a political decision to promote the cultural awareness of the Netherlands speakers amongst themselves, so say Flanders, it's more than Flanders only, and Holland. And next to that, to create a greater awareness within Europe, say within the common market, for these two relatively small countries.
Now, is there any reluctance on behalf of the Dutch, perhaps, to build this long-wave transmitter? Because the Belgians have already got their medium-wave transmitter on the air.
Yes, they were, say, already building before they got the frequency arranged, which was a bit of a gamble, but they got off quite well. The Netherlands at the moment, and mainly because of the economic climate, is very reluctant to build the long-wave transmitter to carry that frequency, which was obtained in Geneva, because, first of all, it's a rather expensive sort of toy. Secondly, there is very little money available in the Netherlands at the moment for extra things. And thirdly, and maybe one of the most important points from a professional standpoint, there are very many protectional conditions to this long-wave frequency from the east and from the south. Leningrad is one with 1,000 kilowatts, not all that far away, so it almost ruins the propagation in the direction of Middle Germany. And there is a North African station working on the same frequency with quite a high output, which makes reception further south than, say, northern France rather debatable.
So what's the answer? Would it perhaps an idea to use one of the existing medium wave channels?
Well, yes, that's one of the solutions which is now up for discussion. Why? Mainly because the Belgians, as you say, are ready. They've got the equipment and they have the money. We haven't got the equipment ready, and we feel politically, morally obliged as a nation to do our share of the bargain. And therefore, the present minister responsible for broadcasting in Holland has proposed to our colleagues on the domestic side to uncouple, as they call it, one of their programs, which is broadcast on FM and medium wave, and to liberate some time on the medium wave for this particular purpose, awaiting the final building of the long wave transmitter.
And what's been the reaction of the domestic broadcasters?
Well, we don't know the official reaction yet. The board meeting where this will be up will be on the 22nd of January. But the early signs, also mirrored in the press already, are an extreme reluctance on the part of the Dutch domestic broadcasting organizations to give up one single minute of whatever. So that will be quite a fight.
Who's involved with the discussions on Radio Delta then?
The Ministry of Culture, Netherlands Culture, as they call it, in Belgium. The Ministry of Culture being the ministry responsible for radio in Holland. The BRT, the Flemish radio organization in Belgium. The NOS, the umbrella organization for domestic in the Netherlands. And ourselves, Radio Netherlands.
Right, okay, Radio Netherlands. Now, does that mean that we might see Radio Delta as part of the Radio Netherlands building?
I shouldn't think so, because Radio Delta, a name incidentally invented by our late colleague, the director of the Belgian World Service, Willy Sanders, is to be an entirely separate organization. We shall all contribute to it, we shall all be represented on its board, but it will be its own master within its statutes.
In Hilversum or Brussels?
No, there has been a decision on that. It will be in the Netherlands, but in the border country, very near to Belgium.
So down south, as far as we're concerned?
Down south, very nice hilly countryside.
But what is the market for this new station? Is it going to be a sort of propaganda broadcast, if it's in English, to the UK?
No, I wouldn't use the word propaganda at all. I think it's rather alien to broadcasting in the Netherlands. We don't do propaganda, I think. First and foremost, to the two peoples concerned, in Holland and in Belgium. It will be very much a semi-domestic exercise. But airtime has already been reserved in the provisional schedule for broadcasting to the UK in English, to France in French, obviously, and to German-speaking countries, in order to create a greater awareness of what's happening in our part of the world, because as a small nation, we do not figure all that much in their media.
Now, would this perhaps be one of the answers to our listeners to Radio Netherlands in the UK who complain that we don't have a prime-time English service for Europe?
Yes, it would be one of the answers, certainly, because we feel committed to this project because it would place us in a position to do our job at a slightly enlarged scale, namely serving audiences outside the Netherlands, which wouldn't take away any priority of trying to find a better slot on the short wave awaiting Delta, or, depending on the final arrangement of the schedule, next to Delta. We are certainly interested in our UK audience, and budgets permitting, we shall do our very best to serve them.
Okay, when do we first hear Delta on the air? Is there a projected date?
There is a projected date, but there is no final okay yet from the ministries concerned in the two countries. The working party on which I've been representing Radio Netherlands has said that it should start at or very near the 1st of January 1983. Next month, January 82, the final report will be presented to the two ministers, and then they will have to take the political decision to give the green light.
Bert Steinkamp.
Radio station WRNO, the New Orleans station, which has been planning a shortwave service for quite some time now, is still trying to make its end-of-the-year deadline. Station manager Joseph Costello III told us on Tuesday that bad weather had delayed the pouring of concrete into the antenna foundations, putting the project about 6 weeks behind. At present, the transmitter is being installed, and work on connecting the feeder lines between the transmitter and the antenna still has to be done. When ready, the station will start on the following announced schedule. 18 to 20 hours on 17895, 20 to 22 hours on 15355, 22 to midnight GMT on 11890, midnight to 02 hours on 11965, and finally 02 hours to 7 hours on 6155 kilohertz. So it might be an idea to watch those frequencies at the turn of the year.
Sunday's development in Poland has been rather interesting from a media point of view. Rather than use the external service to broadcast the various communiques issued by the military authorities, the frequencies of Radio Polonia in Warsaw have fallen silent. As of Wednesday evening, nothing can be detected in the way of a transmitter carrier, either because of a jamming transmitter on the same frequency or no signal whatsoever. But since telex links of the major press agencies have been shut, one of the few sources of information has been the official Warsaw 1 channel on 227 kHz long wave, which broadcast the major speeches and communiques interspersed with Chopin waltzes. Listening here in Hilversum, it was interesting to note that as Sunday progressed, so the musical filler changed in mood, from very sombre in the early hours to instrumental versions of pop songs by the afternoon. You didn't need to fully understand the language, though, to understand the sombre tones of General Jaruzelski at 5 hours GMT Sunday the 13th, who addressed the nation as the tones of the national anthem died away.
Obywatelki i obywatele Polskiej Rzeczypospolitej Ludowej. Zwracam się dziś do was jako żołnierz.
External services frequencies had already left the airwaves since that midnight, together with the domestic shortwave, medium wave and FM transmitters, leaving only two channels, 200 and 227 kHz long wave. Since then, 200 kHz has disappeared, as from yesterday Wednesday. And on Saturday the 12th, all registered Polish radio amateurs were visited and had their transmitting equipment disabled by the military authorities, which explains the absence of clandestine messages on the ham bands. The BBC Monitoring Service reports that since the events of the weekend, other Polish transmitters have appeared, with a carrier only, just before a transmission is supposed to start, either with test tones or open carrier, and then disappearing again a few minutes later.
The French news agency AFP carried an interesting report recently concerning the possibility of a Radio Moscow relay in Sri Lanka. This country in Southeast Asia already has quite a large population of relay transmitters, with facilities of Transworld Radio and the Voice of America already running, and permission already granted to Deutsche Welle, the Voice of Germany, to build a relay station on the island. On a recent visit to Sri Lanka by the Soviet Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Sri Lankan Minister of Foreign Affairs offered the USSR permission to build a relay station. Recently, there's been sharp criticism in Colombo by opposition party members in Parliament, who charged the government with shifting Sri Lanka's non-aligned status with the present facilities on Sri Lankan soil. The USSR concession would be granted subject to the same safeguards that are granted to the other three. So far, there's been no response from the USSR, but it's expected that Radio Moscow does not really need a relay in the area, since the target areas the USSR would be interested in are already reached by transmitters on Soviet soil.
And from Asia to Africa, here's Richard Jinby.
Media View, a look at broadcasting services in Southern Africa. Botswana. Botswana is a patchwork country made up of seven tracts of land spread over three provinces of South Africa. From a point 175 kilometers northeast of Pretoria, westwards to the Botswana border, down to Kuruman and Taung in the Northern Cape, and in the Orange Free State, a small area around Tobancho. In all, this small nation, with a population of nearly 1.25 million, covers an area almost the size of Switzerland. Translated, Botswana means that which binds the Tswana. The origin of the name Tswana is, however, unknown, and even today remains shrouded in mystery. On Independence Day, the 6th of December 1977, Radio Botswana came on the air with a small 300-watt FM transmitter from the capital, Mobatu, on the outskirts of Mafeking, which today, as part of Botswana, is known as Mafikeng. Since then, a national FM network has been established. There is also a 100-kilowatt medium-wave transmitter located at Garankuwa.
This is Radio Botswana broadcasting from Mobatu.
Kirsch Industries, owners and operators of Swaziland Commercial Radio, came together with the Southern Sun Hotel Group to launch Southern Africa's second independent station, Bophuthatswana Commercial Radio, or as it's known on the air, Channel 702.
Channel 702, your more music radio station, at 12 minutes past 11 with champagne, and how about us?
Channel 702 came on the air in June 1980. Located at Harankua, 50 kilometers north of Pretoria, the station on the mountain broadcasts around the clock on medium wave, 702 kilohertz, with the power of 100 kilowatts, offering pop music, hourly news, traffic reports, job opportunities, the... and... 702 has studios and living quarters at Harankua, and also studios in Johannesburg. The Bophuthatswana Broadcasting Advisory Board has issued only one other license to well-known international religious station, Transworld Radio. TWR's newest venture is located at Harankua and will be operational in mid-1982, broadcasting on medium wave with a power of 50 kilowatts in English, Afrikaans and Setswana. Media View will be continued next month.
Our thanks there to Richard Jinby. Now on to some unfinished business.
Receiver News.
3 weeks ago, we broadcast a review on the new National Panasonic receiver, the RF3100. A number of listeners have pointed out that when Vin van Amstel said the selectivity of the set had 3.5 kHz on the wide setting and 1.5 kHz on the narrow setting, he'd missed out three words. We, of course, should have said plus or minus 3.5 and 1.5 kHz, and my fault for letting the error through. Perhaps the alternative way of expressing the figures at 7 kHz for the wide position and 3 kHz for the narrow, measured at minus 6 dB, might be clearer to some listeners. Frank Shoemaker, who lives in New York State, USA, and picked up an RF3100 for $222 at the 47th Street Photo, one of the cheap discount outlets in New York City, wrote to us. After his look at the set, he came up with these observations.
In general, I concur with your valuation of the receiver, but like many of the Panasonic command receivers before it, the RF3100 has shape factors which make the selectivity figures almost meaningless. If you make graphs of the selectivity skirts, as they're called, they tend to look rather like Egyptian pyramids. If you compare the shape factor, expressed as a ratio, you'll see the Panasonic comes out at around 6-1. Which is rather poor compared to the 3-1 of the FRG7700, or 1.8-1 of the Sony CRF1. However, regardless of this, I'm very pleased with the radio, and I too cannot find any true images. There are some internally generated spurs, which are pointed out on the service manual, but it's not bothersome. I would suggest, though, that users don't take the separate high and low impedance antenna terminals too seriously. Try both connections, as different combinations work best at different band selections, particularly on medium wave.
Thanks, Frank. And by the way, we do take note of selectivity curves in our evaluations, but we only ever quote a few figures over the air, as we know the vast majority of our audience is non-technical. There are the follow-up reviews, though, free of charge for those who are. But bear in mind that the Panasonic 3100 costs about a fifth of the price of the Sony CRF1, so you can't expect miracles. Now over to Grundig. Back at the International Radio and TV Fair in Berlin, we reported that Grundig were planning the launch of two new sets to their satellite range of shortwave receivers. It looks as though the programme will be delayed. It appears to be common knowledge that Grundig are having problems with the PLL synthesizer, which is at the heart of both the Satellite 300 and 600 designs. And it's hoped that when the unit is finally developed, it can be used as a basic component for Grundig hi-fi tuners as well. But one piece of information tucked away in the initial specifications concerns the preselector on the 600. It appears that this will be manually operated or automatic, and in the second mode, the tuning will be done by a built-in electric motor. That seems rather a step backwards in 1980s design technology, considering that mechanical parts are the first to go wrong. But it looks like November or December 82 will see the first Satellite 600s off the production line, and then we can make proper judgment. The smaller, cheaper 300 version, to compete with the Sony ICF-2001 keyboard receiver, will appear even later, and will probably have a different appearance than the pre-production press releases indicate. Well, finally today, let's turn the spotlight on media news. And on the line from Washington is Dan Robinson. What have you got for us, Dan?
We have quite a few interesting items this month, Jonathan, so I'll get right into the latest news. Argentina, LRA-36, the Radio Nacional Arcángel San Gabriel station, has been putting in excellent signals lately on 15476. That's 15476, 0012 to 0055, when they have full IDs and national anthem, heard here in Washington and in Pennsylvania by Michael Agner. Try for this one. It's a second log for Antarctica besides AFAN McMurdo on 6012. In Peru, Radio Chota on 6296 made several good showings over the past few weeks between 02 and 03 hours with Peruvian Huaños and a male announcer. Beware, however, those of you with preselector receivers, as it's very easy to mistake another station for Radio Chota if your preselector is mistuned. Honduras, on 4910, La Voz de Mosquitia has been heard again, with a Through the Bible program at 0113 and Spanish IDs introducing their English program. They have apparently made technical improvements at this small missionary station, as their carrier is much more stable now and the audio much cleaner than previously. Indeed, at least they're on the air. Nicaragua, I heard Radio Zinica sign off at 0500 on 6120 after a full ID by a male announcer, and the Nicaraguan national anthem at 0459. Give this one a try, as it has been in the clear in the crowded 49-meter range. Let's go back to Peru and tell you that Radio El Sol de los Andes is being heard lately on 3230, that's 3230, between 0 hours and 0100. Heard here in Washington by Mike Leventhal. Malaysia. Jonathan, it seems we may have a bit of a question on this one. Radio Malaysia has always been a great rarity here on the east coast of North America in our late afternoon period on 60 meters. But it has been heard on a few occasions on 4845 under Mauritania. Well, Mauritania has been moving around lately, and one Play DX reporter says he heard Indian music being played on Mauritania. Well, I'm going to stick my neck out and say that I heard Radio Malaysia on 4845 on one excellent late afternoon South Asian opening with Indian subcontinental style music from 2228 to 2245. At that time, they had time pips and an ID and into what I presume to be news. I believe this to be their Bahasa Malaysia Indian network. Please note, though, that Mauritania was underneath Malaysia on this occasion, a truly amazing example of a good Asian opening. Mozambique. Radio Mozambique was heard on 9618 just yesterday with African instrumental music at 0349, chimes and ID at 0400 by a man in Portuguese. Mauritius. I have seen several reports of MBC at 9709, that's 9709, some at 0300 GMT. Well, I think the best time to hear Mauritius remains the 1230 to 1300 time slot, when you might be able to separate MBC from the station's 1 kilohertz away on 9710. But please use caution here. Don't mistake the 9710 stations for Mauritius, which is always 1 kilohertz down. Equatorial Guinea, I heard Bata with a mailbag program at 2155 on 4925 with sign-off announcements at 2206, national anthem 2207. Armenia, the Voice of Yerevan English program is very good lately on 17870. That's 17870 with Armenian from 0330 to 0352 and English to 0357. I heard this English segment, which incidentally is probably not from Armenia, with a talk on Armenian folk music. They asked for reception reports to the Central Editorial Board of Foreign Broadcasting in Yerevan, and they announced transmissions every day on 17870.
Our thanks there to Dan Robinson, whose address, by the way, is Box 9449, Washington, D.C., 20016, USA, and that's for media news only. That's it for the moment. I'll be back Tuesday with shortwave feedback. For the moment, this is Jonathan Mark saying back soon. Bye for now. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.